Welcome, everybody. It is episode 6 of the RSP Film and Data. Sorry, RSP Fantasy Film and Data. And I'm joined, as usual, by Jay Moyer. Jay, how you doing today?
I'm doing well, Dwayne. Really excited to get back on here and talk. You know, every couple weeks, it's hard not to talk to you for that long. So really excited to see what we can discover today.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, let's jump into it. We're going to talk about a couple of offenses here to start us off with the Seahawks and Lions that are just, you know, Jay, these two offenses are really outperforming what any of us thought they would do from a fantasy perspective, you know, or just, you know, from, hey, just talking football perspective. But if you look at Russell Wilson, you know, his career high in passing yards, 4,219, which was in 2016. Right now, he's already sitting at 2,500 passing yards, you know. So, I mean, this is a guy that's on pace to, you know, break, you know, his own record. And he's a guy that really, in most fantasy circles, you know, you could have gotten Russell Wilson pretty late this year. You know, typically, you know, in the years before, Russell Wilson was one of the top 3-4 quarterbacks taken off the board. In most drafts this year, that wasn't the case. He was a guy that you could have just, you know, waited on and probably got, you know, in the 9th or 10th round in most formats, you know, as, you know, 8th, 9th, 10th. Heck, I know that I got him a couple of times after the, you know, past the 12th quarterback taken off the board. And I'm happy about where I own him. You know, if you look at where he's at, he's already got 22 touchdown passes. He's only got one interception. And if you look at, you know, what the way that the Seahawks are doing, and if you look at his yards per attempt, Jay, it's based on these explosive plays, 8.55 yards per attempt. If you look at what he's done, you know, under pressure, he's the number one rated quarterback in the league, Jay, against pressure this season as far as NFL quarterback rating goes. According to Pro Football Focus, he has a rating of 112. And, you know, he's a guy that is actually – he's pressured pretty often, you know. So 41% of the time, he's actually under pressure whenever he drops back, which is the third most. Yet, he is the top-rated quarterback against pressure. He's got 8 touchdowns, 0 interceptions, 964 of his yards have actually come against pressure. So that's pretty heady stuff, you know, that Wilson's doing, or the numbers that he's putting up. You know, so I just we'll talk about the receivers here in a minute, but I just want to get your thoughts more on what you're seeing from Russell Wilson, you know, this year. Is there anything different? Are you seeing anything different, you know, with this offense in particular?
Well, you know, I think a lot of people, first of all, were scared off by last season's tendency to run the ball much more. That, you know, the Seahawks were probably the most run heavy team in any game script situation. You can talk about last year in 2018. And, you know, they still put quite a bit of effort into developing their running game this year and still, you know, try to establish the run and get that part of their offense going. But, you know, they tend to open it up more. And Russell Wilson, you know, there's no new development that he is an elite quarterback. Interestingly, you know, there was a debate this offseason about whether Russell Wilson truly is elite, which was just somewhat silliness. And, you know, there are also narratives out there that he needed a run heavy offense to be effective, because if you were to put the offense on his shoulders, he may falter. But really, you know, when we talk about Russell Wilson, a couple things stand out to me. One is just his control over any type of situation. You know, you can call it poise or whatever, but when he's pressured, you know, the guy never gets flustered. He's obviously a great athlete, so he has the athleticism to evade tacklers. He has great pocket awareness and he just never panics. You know, there are guys in his face and he's still calmly surveying downfield. And then you add on top of that, the ability to throw accurate passes to any location really in the field from a variety of arm angles. And, you know, those two things, the poise and then the arm talent, really add up to the explanation for why he's so elite under pressure. You know, you saw him last week against Tampa Bay where he's leading multiple game-tying, game-winning drives. And really, you know, it's you really got to take time to enjoy these types of performances when elite athletes are put in those situations to really just show off their talents. You know, you compare him to what we saw last night with Phillip Rivers, who, don't get me wrong, you know, he's been a great quarterback through his career, but he's coming to the tail end of his career and doesn't have that ability to deal with pressure like Russell Wilson does. And they get to the 2-minute drill against the Raiders. And, you know, Phillip Rivers is over 8 on his attempts, throws an interception to end the game, really just tossing the ball up because of perceived pressure. So it's really, really fun to watch Russell Wilson execute in those situations, because honestly, there's not much you can do. And so, you know, it's fun to see that Seattle's really opened up the offense a bit more from what they did last year. And unsurprisingly, he's been able to capitalize.
Yeah, I think one of the other things that, you know, folks were looking at, and you're definitely right about the, you know, the tendencies of the Seahawks, right? And Schottenheimer, along with Pete Carroll, and what we've seen historically. And, you know, they're still passing the ball 54% of the time, running the ball 46% of the time. If you go by dropbacks, you know, which will include your sacks and then your scrambles, 58% of the time, you know, they're actually attempting to pass the ball, which is, you know, still one of the lower in the league. It's not down with San Francisco, which, you know, is at 45%, you know, because they run the ball, you know, literally almost all of the time. But I think the other thing that folks might've been a little bit worried about is, you know, okay, so Doug Baldwin is gone. He retired. You got a young guy coming in and DK Metcalf, you know, he's just a rookie. Tyler Lockett, while he had performed well, you know, in a role where he didn't have to necessarily always be the centerpiece of the offense, I think there were some concerns also about, you know, just how well could Tyler Lockett perform whenever defenses were really more focused on him and trying to take him away. So when you look at, you know, those receivers and you look at what Russell Wilson has done, you know, really well, I mean, Wilson this season, you know, Jay, he's got 49 attempts of 20 yards or longer, which is the third most in the league, you know, and that's 49 attempts on 200 out of 293. So when you actually bring it, you know, to a percentage, he actually has more deep attempts than any other. From a percentage standpoint, he is the quarterback that attempts the most deep passes, you know, in the league. And he's always been really good at that. But I feel like a big component of that really, you know, comes down to, you know, what we're seeing with Tyler Lockett stepping up, you know, and answering, you know, the call as far as, you know, being able to take on more. If you look at Tyler Lockett from a standpoint, you know, of his deep passing targets, he's got 16 on the year, and he's, and it's crazy when you look at Wilson and his receivers and their conversion rates on these, because he's got 16 targets and he's got 10 receptions. He's got one drop. But he's got three on these passes over 20 yards. He's got 283 yards, and then he's got three touchdowns. And then DK Metcalf is, you know, fourth, you know, on the list for target, you know, for, sorry, catch rate on these deep passing balls. Lockett's number two in the NFL. DK Metcalf's number four. And again, this goes back to Wilson, but these guys are performing well. Metcalf's got 308 yards, and he's got three touchdowns on plays of over, you know, 20 yards. So these two guys, you know, seem to be a perfect match for what Russell Wilson does really well. You know, a guy that can sit back there and, like you talked about, he can elude, you know, the pass rush. He can buy time. You know, there's a lot of things that he does well whenever it comes to being under pressure. And then by buying that little bit of extra time, you know, he's also able to deliver. He's a very accurate deep passer. And then he's got these weapons now that are just, you know, it just seems like a perfect match, really, you know, from what I'm seeing.
Yeah. I mean, I think what you're seeing with the construction of their offense, the talent that's around Wilson, Wilson's talent in and of itself, you know, is all right on track, and really is reflective of smart, you know, smart coaching. Nobody wants to give Pete Carroll and the Seahawks credit, but they've been a successful organization, you know, for the past decade or so. They've won a Super Bowl, and it's just, it's smart football. You know, Russell Wilson is elite in many categories, but probably the thing that he does better than anybody else in football from the quarterback position is throw the deep ball. You know, it's really uncanny in terms of his accuracy. And, you know, for that reason, he throws deep more than other people, more than almost any other quarterback, or I guess every other quarterback this year. And also completes a much higher percentage of those passes than you would expect. And, you know, when you talk about Tyler Lockett, he's a smaller receiver, you know, is fast, but you don't necessarily think of those guys as being great. Those small receivers being great contested, you know, deep downfield players. Lockett is excellent at tracking the ball. Physical coverage doesn't really affect him, especially on the deep passes. You've seen many, many plays where he's catching the balls, you know, at sort of awkward angles, physical contact at the last second, making the ball adjustment, really, you know, selling out, not worrying about how he's going to land, et cetera, and making the play. So that Lockett is obviously a great fit, and his chemistry with Wilson has been well documented, you know, in the media, but then also just as you look at the efficiency of targets that Tyler Lockett has received over the past couple of years. And then when you talk about DK Metcalf, you know, he's a guy that the NFL was lower on than most of the draft media, you know, a football player that you design an NFL blitz, essentially, embodies explosiveness. He's huge, running a 4.3 40. And in college, when you look at his success, you know, it was on these deep passes where he's able to use his size to separate at the line and then accelerate, stack the corner, get a pass over the top. You know, he's good at tracking the ball, good hands, catching it over the shoulder. And really, it's, again, the perfect fit with Russell Wilson. There are a lot of quarterbacks where if you plug DK Metcalf into the lineup and, you know, had him running routes for those quarterbacks, they wouldn't really be able to target him effectively. But it's just the perfect weapon for Russell Wilson to have because he can lay that in over the top very accurately. You know, Metcalf is going to be able to get some separation down the field. So if it's an accurate pass, it's a long touchdown. And, you know, that's been reflected in those numbers that you just mentioned. And so when you already have those two guys, you know, it's just smart design of your offensive personnel, and it's going to lend itself to effective passing downfield. And now one thing that, you know, we haven't really thought about or even talked about is adding in another receiver who's really, you know, excellent in terms of running those intermediate and downfield routes, and that's Josh Gordon. And you and I have both professed our admiration for Gordon on this podcast and elsewhere. You know, in watching him with the Patriots, he's probably not quite as explosive as he has been in years past, especially, you know, that all-pro season in 2013. But he still is an excellent route runner, really plays the receiver position with refinement, you know, runs good downfield intermediate routes. Is excellent at working leverage against corners. He really has made some spectacular plays this year that gets somewhat overlooked because the volume hasn't been there in the Patriots offense. But definitely still is showing flashes of being a really excellent playmaker down the field. You know, in the Patriots offense, Brady's often looking to work defenses underneath at this stage in his career. So it wasn't necessarily a great fit where he's going to force targets in there to Gordon. But now when you have Gordon, Metcalf, and Lockett, you know, three guys whose strengths really align well with what Russell Wilson does well, I don't really see how many teams are going to be stopping this offense. And in terms of talking about Russell Wilson's fantasy potential, you know, a very good chance that he's the number one quarterback when we look back at the end of the season.
Yeah, I'm with you. I don't see really you know, a scenario where he finishes outside of, you know, the top three or four for sure. I'm with you. I think at this point, you know, it's safe to say that he could easily finish as the number one. You know, you'd like to see a little bit more volume in passing, but this is nothing new, like you said, for Russell Wilson. He's always been more about, you know, being efficient versus volume. So it isn't something where, you know, a lot of times, you know, whenever you have situations like this, there is the whole argument of the regression to the mean, but it's like the regression to what mean? Like Russell Wilson has proven through his career, you know, where his mean is. And, you know, so for him, you know, whenever he's got these types of weapons, you know, which may, these might be the best two weapons that he's had as far as having two guys that can consistently stretch the field, you know, and play to his strengths, you know, this might be the best scenario that he's been in. So I'm with you. I mean, you know, we're nine games in, obviously we've got more to play. You've got Deshaun Watson, Lamar Jackson. Those guys are all sitting right there pretty close. But before we move off of the Seahawks, you know, just how valuable do you see Josh Gordon being? Because I mean, while Russell Wilson, you know, can play through, you know, these things through efficiency and his receivers, you know, they certainly have their big weeks, but if you add another mouth to feed and now all of a sudden, you know, you're only dropping back to pass on 58% of your plays, you know, which is one of the lower in the league, but now you're splitting that three ways. Do you see this being a scenario where, you know, Josh Gordon potentially eats into what the other two guys are doing? Or do you just see it as being, you know, Gordon will probably, you know, have a role where he's getting a little bit, less. Maybe he's just really taking on more of what we've seen, over the past, several weeks from, David Moore. And then you also have, Jerron Brown, who's worked in, those two guys, Jay, they're typically out there, between the two of them, they're typically out there for like 70% to 80%, of the snaps. And between the two of them, they're usually running about the same, rate of dropbacks of routes per dropback for Russell Wilson. And those are, Jerron Brown's definitely more of an underneath guy, but David Moore, he stretches the field, just like DK Metcalf and Tyler Lockett. His average depth of target is 14.5 on the year. So just give the audience a little bit of your thoughts, of how you see Gordon fitting in and what that might do from a fantasy perspective.
Yeah, before I do that, I do want to touch on, the volume point that you brought up for Russell Wilson. And I think one thing that differentiates 2019 from previous years for the Seahawks is their defense is much more vulnerable this year. So, it's not as often they're getting in game scripts where they can just run the ball. You look at, the past five or six games that they've played, their defense has allowed 34, 20, 30, 28, 29 points. And so, every week they're getting in these high scoring shootouts. So, the volume is better than it has been in the past. And so, Wilson's ceiling is obviously going to be higher with that volume. When we talk about what Josh Gordon's going to do to the offense, I think midseason receiver acquisitions typically are, a bit of a lottery ticket. You never really know what you're going to get. A lot of it depends on how quickly the receiver is able to pick up offenses. Josh Gordon, obviously, last year in New England was able to come in and, reliably see the field, make some plays for New England in what is, widely known as one of the more complex offenses for receivers. A lot of adjustments at the line of scrimmage, option routes, a quarterback who's not going to put up for mistakes from receivers and Tom Brady. If you're not running the right routes and making the right adjustments, he's not even going to look your way. And oftentimes you won't even be on the field. So I think Gordon's shown that he can pick up an offense quickly, even a complex offense quickly. Some of it also depends on how willing the team is to install, a smaller package of plays for that receiver and sort of tailor certain looks to that receiver who came in the middle of the season. When Gordon's on the field, which at this point it's hard to say how much he's going to see the field, I think that will... It won't necessarily eat into the production for Lockett or Metcalf. I think that it will grow the pie for the offense as a whole. I also don't expect Gordon to be, an exclusive player in terms of totally shutting out David Moore and Jerron Brown from seeing the field. He'll probably have a limited snap share. So I think the offense will get more potent. They may sub him in for DK Metcalf every once in a while, because those two players do have, somewhat overlapping skill sets. So I could see them envisioning somewhat of a split there, but I'd like to see those three guys on the same field, in which case I think the pie for the whole offense in those scenarios will get bigger, and he may take away some attention from Lockett in terms of defensive attention or defensive attention from Metcalf. In New England, Josh Gordon was the guy seeing the number one corner week in, week out. And so if defenses treat him like they were in New England, and, Seattle has some scarier downfield threats than what New England had around Gordon, so it may not be the case. But if he's able to attract that type of attention, it's going to really open things up for Lockett and Metcalf.
So to me, I think we're on the same page here. What I feel like is this is a positive for Russell Wilson. It's a positive for, the Seahawks offense overall. If you're a Seahawks fan, this is great. If you're the Josh Gordon owner, though, from a fantasy perspective, and it's not like he was doing a ton, so far with the Patriots, I guess the positive here is, is he is matched up with a quarterback that can probably highlight his strengths, right? But I feel like the amount of time he's going to be on the field and the amount of times he's going to be running routes when Russell Wilson's dropping back to pass is going to probably be much lower than what he was accustomed to in New England, which from a fantasy perspective, I think it's going to make him a dicey proposition. I think he's going to have weeks where he's going to, he's going to score his touchdown, he'll have his big play, and you'll probably feel fine about having him in your lineup. But I think he's going to be hard to trust You know, obviously this first week, you're not going to jam him into your lineup. You know, you know, it's like you said, every team is a little bit different in how they handle these things. We'll have a better read after this week. But my gut is telling me that, you know, he's just not probably going to be a super valuable fantasy asset, you know, unless you're in a super deep league. What are your thoughts?
If I had to put my money on the table right now, I would go with what you just described. You know, it's hard to rely on him to come in so late in the season and be a primary option. So it's you know, there's a very good chance that he is, you know, three or four receivers down the pecking order in terms of targets. Does have the capacity to make big plays. So there's always the chance that he'll have a big week. You know, you look at Metcalf this season, and he's been somewhat boom or bust in terms of his production week to week. And a lot of that is the nature of the targets he's seeing down the field. You know, one thing that I think is common is a comparison in people's minds between Metcalf and Gordon, because they're both really big receivers. They're both explosive receivers who, you know, run faster than you would think it's possible at that size. I think at this stage in his career, as I mentioned earlier, Metcalf is the more explosive player. He's faster. But Josh Gordon is really much more polished at running, you know, the entire route tree. He's always had better feet and agility than what Metcalf has shown thus far in his career. And so, again, I do think there's a chance that he sees the field reliably in a complementary role to Lockett and Metcalf. And if he's able to pick up the offense, I mean, the talent, in my opinion, is still there. And I do think that at the, you know, the high end of outcomes, he could be a reliable, you know, wide receiver, low end wide receiver two, wide receiver three, but that is not what I would project, because I think that most likely there's going to be some kind of integration process, and it's going to be boom bust where there are weeks where he'll score, you know, single digits. And then there'll be one week sprinkled in where he has a couple big catches and it's a big week. So, you know, hard to count on a guy like that. So more exciting from an NFL perspective than a fantasy perspective, I'd say, in terms of from the Gordon perspective.
So Gordon's a guy, you know, for me, if you can move him, you know, you do it, right? If you're in a season long type situation, you know, if you're in a dynasty, you know, if he flashes here, you know, this could potentially mean a little bit more. But if you're in a season long type format, you know, if you can get something for him, you know, his name still has value. You might still be able to get something for him. So let's talk a little bit now. You know, we've got Daryl Bevell, who is the former coordinator in Seattle, you know, and departed from there a couple of years ago, that's now in Detroit. And this is another offense, Jay, like, you know, it's just what Matt Stafford's doing, you know, is kind of what I think people have been waiting to see Matt Stafford do for years now. You know, early in Matt Stafford's career, you know, he was seen, you know, really as an elite fantasy, you know, option at quarterback. And a lot of that was based on volume. And then, you know, people kept buying into that, but he wasn't able to, you know, produce those same type of results despite having a higher draft price. And now, you know, we're to the point in his career where people have just pretty much had forgotten, you know, about Matt Stafford. He wasn't being drafted at all in most formats. So Stafford's a guy that, you know, because I wait on quarterbacks so long, Stafford's a guy that I own over half of my teams. He's a guy that I picked up very early in the season, just when I saw, you know, the offense really clicking, and you know, I just looked at the style of the receivers that they had around him and the way that they were using him, and just felt that that was a good fit with the way Stafford plays. But this is another guy that if you look at where he sits today, he's got 2,499 yards on the season. It's funny, he and Russell Wilson from that perspective almost identical. And listen to this: his yards per attempt 8.59. Russell Wilson's at 8.55. 19 touchdown passes versus 22, you know, for Russell Wilson. So Stafford in his own right, you know, Jay, is, I mean, he's producing, you know, on a very high level. You know, he does have, you know, a 5,000 plus yard passing, you know, year in his, you know, career already. So he may not break his own personal record, but I wouldn't be surprised if he did, you know, this year. You know, he's a guy that just continues to put up, you know, big results each week. You know, and again, you know, starting to talk about the guys that are around him, you know, you talk about, you know, Kenny Galladay, you talk about Marvin Jones, you know, and we can come back to those guys in a minute, but they seem to be a great fit. And Daryl Bevell seems to be, you know, really maximizing their talents and pairing that with what Stafford does really well. So why don't you talk to us a little bit about what you're seeing with Stafford, you know, in this kind of rejuvenated, you know, state of his career, and how he's helping fantasy teams, and do you see it continuing?
Yeah, well, Stafford is an interesting case study in terms of, you know, nonlinear development. So the thing that's always been there with Stafford is really elite arm talent. You know, he's great arm strength, you know, always has had very good accuracy to all levels of the field, you know, even the really deep areas of the field, you know, 35 plus yards downfield. And when he came into the league, he was on the Lions. He had Calvin Johnson, who's, you know, one of the best deep downfield receivers really of all time when you think about it. And so he was able to utilize his arm talent and an elite receiver to, you know, put up great production. And he had some huge years there with Calvin Johnson. But in doing that, wasn't necessarily forced to learn the finer points of quarterback play, you know, working through progressions, reading the defense, attacking vulnerabilities in the defense. So then once Calvin Johnson had his injuries, wasn't there any longer, he really struggled to be effective with a downfield passing game when he didn't have that elite talent to really open things up. And then Jim Bob Cooter came in and installed a short passing offense that really, you know, most short passing offenses are really built around processing, finding the open man, attacking where the defense is weak. And so Stafford was then forced to develop in those areas because, you know, the offense wasn't relying on his arm talent as much as his mental processing. He sort of reached a peak with that style of offense over the past couple of years. And interestingly, their receivers, Galladay and Jones, are both players who really specialize downfield, you know, tracking the ball, adjusting to the ball, excellent hands, hand-eye coordination, you know, can make catches under physical coverage, contested catches. And so it's funny because then they were sort of doing this square peg round hole with the talent they had on hand, with Jim Bob Cooter calling the plays, you know, quick passing game. And now this year with Bevel, they've opened it up a bit in terms of, you know, intermediate deep passes down the field. And it's really a great scheme fit now with who Stafford is, having developed his processing, his, you know, his mental abilities as a passer, and, you know, with arm talent that's still there, has always been there. And then the accessory talent they have around them. And then another factor is, you know, Kerryon Johnson obviously was injured, and then Trey Carson was injured coming, you know, as he had been worked in as sort of a three-way, you know, three-headed monster in the backfield. So they're very thin at running back, and a lot of the power run game stuff that they've tried to do this year hasn't worked, even when Kerryon Johnson was in the lineup. So they've really had to move away from that a bit because of injuries and ineffectiveness. And really it's an offense now that runs through Stafford, you know, higher volume passing attack than what people thought going into the year, as Bevel had talked about wanting to establish the run. Matt Patricia was saying the same things. So, you know, these two quarterbacks really surprisingly, or, you know, pass heavier than anticipated. And both of them are great talents who have offenses that are really, you know, well designed to their strengths.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, if you look at Stafford on the year, you know, he's already got the season. He's already got four games, Jay, where he's thrown for over 350 yards. Listen to his average depth of target, you know, in these games. And this is for each game: 12.4, 10.6, 12.2, 13.3, 10.4, 9.1, 12.1, 11.7. So that's very similar to what Bevel did, you know, with Russell Wilson, right? Back, you know, with Seattle. It's based on pushing the ball down the field. And like you said, you know, Stafford's always had the arm talent, and it's just something where, you know, like you said, it seems to really be clicking. I mean, so we talked a moment ago about Tyler Lockett and DK
Metcalf. One thing on Stafford, you know, Patrick Mahomes gets a lot of credit for the no-look passes. When you watch Stafford, you know, I'm just saying this because it's so fun to see, you know, he made a few no-look passes last week against the Raiders that were really just outstanding. And he'll make some tight window throws that are scratching your head as to how that ball made its way in there. So, you know, he's one of the more fun quarterbacks to watch. So just wanted to point that out before we move on to the next topic.
No, that's good. I mean, and really, this stuff just all goes together anyway.
Yeah.
All I was going to touch on was, you know, Marvin Jones. You know, we talked about DK Metcalf and Tyler Lockett, you know, a moment ago, from a standpoint of catch rate. You know, those guys are ranked second and fourth in the league. Marvin Jones is ranked seventh on passes over 20 yards. You know, so he's got 14 targets, 7 receptions, you know, 200 yards. He doesn't have any touchdowns. But if you go down to Kenny Golladay, listen to this, Jay, 23 targets over 20 yards. That is by far the most in the league. And he's got 3 touchdowns. He's got 300 yards on plays over 20 yards or more. And 3 touchdowns. So, yeah, it's a vertical passing game. Like you said, these seem to be two guys in different ways that specialize, you know, going downfield. When I watch Marvin Jones, you know, I see more of an acrobatic, you know, he's 6'2", but, you know, he almost plays with more finesse, right? You know, in the way that he creates angles and separation. Kenny Golladay is almost like just brute strength. You know, they both win in different ways, but they can be applied similarly, you know, on the field, you know, and the Lions are doing a great job of doing that. And then, you know, you add in TJ Hockenson and you add in Danny Amendola. And so those two guys being able to work the interior of the field, you know, so basically this is an offense, you know, that can create a mismatch in the passing game, pretty much anywhere on the field. Now, TJ Hockenson hasn't, you know, done as much since his week 1 breakout. But, you know, he's still a guy that poses a threat. He's had a couple of very close misses on touchdown passes down in the red zone and in the end zone. So those are guys that can really work, you know, as well. You know, the thing about Golladay, you know, Jay, I mean, if you look at his opportunities, I mean, nobody in the league is getting the type of leverage opportunities that he is across the board. So if you look at end zone targets, he's third. He has 11 targets in the end zone this year. The top in the NFL is 13, second is 12th, and he's sitting at 11. And then if you look at air yards, Jay, he's got 1,080. That's second in the league. So, I mean, you're talking about the fantasy receiver that's got the second most air yards, and he's got the third most targets in the end zone. And we already talked about, you know, his big plays and his, you know, his touchdowns that he scored on over 20 yards or more. So Kenny Golladay is a guy that, you know, I honestly didn't draft enough of because I thought, you know, I'm not real sure about, you know, his full skill set. You know, I saw him as being a guy that was, from an application perspective, is good at, you know, 3 or 4 things, not like 6 things. And I was concerned about, you know, how much the team was going to run versus pass. And like you said, this offense has evolved. But if you own Kenny Golladay, he's only had a 21% target share, which is right around where I projected him. I had him at 22%. But man, this efficiency and the rebound that we've seen from Stafford, you know, is insane. What are your any other thoughts, you know, on these receivers or any other components of the offense?
Yeah, definitely. I think that Marvin Jones has always, throughout his whole career, been a bit underrated, or not a bit, but pretty substantially underrated.
Well, you know, our founder Matt. Waldman is a huge Marvin Jones proponent. Always has.
Yeah,
been.
I can just see him grinning ear to ear as we talk about it. You know, and I think because his frame, you know, he's a slight of frame, but he sort of plays a little bit more like a bigger receiver. And, you know, he does have those finesse elements and really those acrobatic catches that you talk about. But also, you know, his ability to fight through physical coverage and make plays down the field, you know, I think is really underrated, probably because of what he looks like on the field, you know, being a slight, skinny guy. There was a play last week where Stafford, you know, targeted him down the left sideline. I actually posted this over on my Twitter account this morning. You know, deep shot, I think about 45 air yards down the field, left sideline, slightly behind Jones, who had created separation. So he has to come back and it becomes a contested catch. Tracks the ball perfectly, you know, gets the DB off him with his elbow, jumps leaning back and snags the ball with his hands, lands on his back with the defensive back on top of him, makes the catch. And really, Jones has been doing those types of things his whole career. Just the volume hasn't always been there. So I think that he is really an excellent receiver and one of the most underrated receivers in the NFL. And then Golladay, you know, he's always been big, physical, aggressive, really good hands, really good ball tracking. Some of the similar strengths that I just talked about with Marvin Jones. But, you know, he's not necessarily explosive in his routes, his route running, you know, his releases against press, his manipulation of leverage using his route stem was really subpar his rookie year last year. He's improved in those areas. He's still not elite, and that's why he doesn't necessarily create a ton of separation. But Stafford trusts him, and he's going to target him and trust that he'll create that micro separation using his physicality and his ball tracking and hand-eye coordination skills. So, you know, both of those receivers are very good to excellent receivers in the NFL. And then Amendola is a very reliable slot option. TJ Hawkinson is developing. He can do some excellent things, you know, running lateral breaking routes against tight ends, safeties. And they've provided enough threat under the field to where if teams are able to take away both of those excellent receivers they have out wide, they have third and fourth options that are effective enough to keep the ball moving.
Yeah, so I guess the real question for fantasy owners here, right, you know, do we see Stafford, you know, continuing this? Do we see him landing in the top five, six quarterbacks, you know, when it comes, you know, time for fantasy playoffs? Can people trust Stafford? Is he a guy to target in a trade? Or if you already have him on your team, do you feel comfortable plugging him into your lineup, you know, each week?
Yeah, I mean, I think that he's a guy that I'd be riding with at this point. Again, you know, when you talk about game script, their defense hasn't been as effective as people necessarily thought it would be this year. So he's been in a lot of high scoring games. I think that will continue. And, you know, with an offense designed to his skill set and surrounding talent that matches what he does well, you know, there's always a high ceiling there, just like what we talked about with Russell Wilson.
Yeah, I'm with you. I mean, like I said, I own him on a ton of my teams. So I'm excited, you know, to have him because honestly, when I picked him up, I felt good about what they were doing, but I didn't honestly think that I was getting, you know, a top six, you know, fantasy quarterback. I thought I had a top 12 guy, you know, and so I've been thoroughly happy, you know, with the results I've gotten. So,
I think it really speaks to the value of the strategy that you always employ, as you mentioned earlier, in waiting to draft a quarterback every year. You know, first of all, if you're in a standard 12-team league, single quarterback, there are more good quarterbacks than there are starting spots. So you can always get a guy in, you know, last couple rounds. And then every year, one or two or three of those players has a better season than before because the talent has always been there. And it's really the surrounding factors that go into, you know, a productive fantasy season. Stafford's always been a really good NFL quarterback. His fantasy production hasn't always been there because, you know, differences in how good their defense is or the coaching approach or the surrounding talent. And so, you know, it's just a great lesson in terms of taking in those, you know, peripheral factors and trying to get a quarterback at the end of your draft rather than reaching for someone early.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and I think, you know, a lot of folks have caught on to that strategy, but still every year, you know, you see folks that, you know, want to take quarterbacks early. And it's not that you can never take a quarterback early, but I think, yeah, it's a great job by you just to kind of, it's a great reminder, you know, because a guy like Stafford, literally, I mean, that's one of the best examples because just for the most part, probably wasn't drafted. And most of the folks that are listening, you know, as far as Kenny Golladay goes, honestly, you know, I mean, he's the number 10 wide receiver in PPR formats, you know, right now. And honestly, Jay, you know, there's more meat left on the bone. I mean, a guy that's getting that many air yards, that's getting that many targets in the end zone, you know, it's kind of strange to say because I thought Kenny Golladay this season, you know, I would have felt good with him as my wide receiver too, but right now he's already sitting in the top 12. And honestly, he could easily be sixth or fifth just based on the opportunities that he's getting, you know, and they're consistently continuing to give him those type of opportunities. So Kenny Golladay, honestly, it sounds kind of weird, but he's really a buy low right now. Yeah, he's acting as a wide receiver one and you're going to have to pay a decent price. But I think there's actually more that you could get from him because of, you know, the way that they're utilizing him. And I would expect him to continue on as a wide receiver one, you know, for the rest of the season. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, I totally agree. Just okay. A great scheme well, cool. fit. You know, Stafford trusts him. The volume's there. The depth of targets are there. Sometimes a bit, you know, hit or miss. You see in Tampa Bay with Mike Evans and Chris Godwin, again, two excellent receivers who are in an offense that really fits their talents well. You know, week to week, you aren't necessarily sure he's going to get the lion's share. Good pun based on the team we're talking about. But completely accidental, the lion's share of the production. But, you know, more weeks than not, Galladay is going to give you a week that you're happy about.
Yeah, and just from, you know, a standpoint of over the course of the season, you know, his target shares have been 20%, 33%, 25%, 26%, 28%. He's had one game that hurt him. He had a 4%er in week 7 when it went 29% to Marvin Jones and 22% to Danny Amendola. But then he bounced back with a 25% in week 8. And then he had his second lowest of the season last week in week 9, which was 17%, but he still had two targets in the end zone. And he's getting the most targets of the team, you know, by far. Hawkins, he's got 41% of those on the season. Marvin Jones has 22% of those with 6. You know, he had 4, obviously, in week 7 when he had that huge fantasy week. And then you have TJ Hawkinson, who's got 5 targets in the end zone on the season. So he's 3rd on the team. So, yeah, I think those guys are all solid options. I like Marvin Jones, you know, as well. I don't like him quite as much as Galladay. I've got him more in the wide receiver 3, wide receiver 2 range. He seems to be the guy that takes on a little bit more fluctuation, you know, week to week. But, you know, he's a lot closer to, you know, Kenny Galladay than a lot of folks may, you know, realize. And then Danny Amendola, he's a tougher guy to use. You've really got to, you know, it's more of an anticipation thing, you know, with him, because you need one of the weeks where he's going to be running a route on 80, 75% of the dropbacks, which is really based more on matchup. You know, because they just deploy their guys differently based on, you know, who their opponent is, and which, you know, makes sense. This is Matt Patricia. He comes from the Bill Belichick tree. So Danny Amendola is basically, you know, he's their Julian Edelman that, you know, comes off the field, doesn't get to play Z, but he's the guy that they like in the slot.
Yeah. And I think that, you know, in speaking to that variability, when you have two really good receivers, I think that a lot of it comes down to the defensive approach. You know, if teams are going to treat Galladay like a true number one, you know, sticking their number one corner or even having extra safety help over the top, Marvin Jones is good enough to then capitalize, which is why you see that 4% target week and, you know, Marvin Jones getting 29%. So Stafford's not going to necessarily force it to Galladay like Michael Thomas. You know what, regardless of the coverage Michael Thomas is facing, he's going to get his targets in New Orleans. So, it, you know, studying the defensive trends, you know, man versus zone, does this team have a number one corner that's really shadowing one guy or the other, or are they someone that tends to double team the number one? That can give you a little bit of window of insight into what to expect week to week. You know, you mentioned again how that applies to Amendola as well.
Yeah, absolutely. What was interesting is when they played the Packers, Jair Alexander shadowed Marvin Jones, not Kenny Galladay.
Often. And this is something I've noticed actually over the last couple of years. Often Marvin Jones does draw the team's number one corner. And yeah. I think that often NFL teams will devote their better corner to the receiver that they think is better at separating. So even though Galladay is thought of, you know, he leads the team in targets and he's thought of as a Lions number one receiver, especially when you're talking about in a fantasy sense, Marvin Jones is a little bit better of a separator, runs a lot of downfield routes that are potentially more dangerous to a defense. And often NFL teams will really just devote extra attention to those types of guys rather than, you know, the big guy who's a little less explosive but can make contested catches.
Yeah, absolutely. So let's switch gears now and let's talk about an offense. And this is not a terrible offense by any means, but it's just it's a passing offense that's, to me, is underperforming a little bit, Jay. You know, and it may not be for you, but coming into this season, you know, my expectations, you know, for Carson Wentz were higher, I think, than what yours and Matt's were. But, you know, Wentz is, he's not doing terrible. You know, he's still, you know, in the top 12 quarterbacks as far as fantasy goes. But I'm just, you know, we're not seeing, you know, those big weeks. You know, we're not seeing, you know, those consistent, you know, 300 yard, 2-3 touchdown, you know, type weeks. That's just not, you know, what we're getting, you know, from Wentz, you know, at this point. You know, if you look at what he's done on the season, you know, he's sitting at the 11th ranked quarterback. He's got 2,060 yards. He's got 15 touchdown passes. He's got 4 interceptions. So, I mean, those things all sound, they all sound good. But whenever you start to break it down by week, you know, you just heard what we did with Stafford and all of those huge games. So Wentz got off to a great start in week one. You know, he had 313 yards. He threw for 3 touchdowns. But since then, 231 yards and 1 touchdown. Then 259 and 2. Not too bad. 160, and he paid off with 3 touchdowns. But then 189 and 1 touchdown. 306 yards and 2 touchdowns. That's pretty good. But then 191 and 1. 172 and 1, and then 239 yards and 1 touchdown. And, you know, that week one effort was with DeSean Jackson on the field, which obviously, you know, he has not had again, you know, since then. And now DeSean has been shut down. So it's a team that doesn't really have, you know, a true deep threat. It doesn't have that vertical element. And I think that's part of, you know, what is hurting, you know, Wentz and the team. When I look across, you know, the field and I see a guy like Alshon Jeffrey and I see a guy like Zach Ertz and Dallas Goedert, they're all very good players. But none of them really, I think, scare opposing defenses as far as being able to really, you know, make them pay, you know, with a huge play. You know, it's more, it's got to be much more of a methodical possession type offense to move the ball, you know, down the field in that fashion. And so when you look at Wentz right now, you know, he's not quite paying off on, you know, the draft capital that most people, you know, were spending on him. You know, if you look at, you know, his deep passing, that's an area where, you know, he hasn't. And again, this, I think some of this goes back to what I was just talking about with the fit, you know, with the players that he has, you know, around him. But if you look at what he's done from a deep passing perspective, you know, he's not anywhere close to a lot of the guys that, or to the two guys that we just talked about before. You know, his right now, he's sitting at 11th in the league. He's got 39 attempts, but he's only got 437 yards off of that. Versus if you look at a guy like Russell Wilson, 824 yards coming off of the deep passing, right? And Russell Wilson's got 8 touchdowns or 7 touchdowns in that area, where Wentz has only got 4, and Wentz also has 3 picks. So that's something, you know, that's been, you know, a bit of an issue. And, it, and you know, that's something that Matt really talks about with Wentz, is that he's not really a great deep ball thrower. He's
Can I add something?
Yeah, jump in.
Yeah, so just want to jump in here and point out the difference between a pinpoint passer and a general area passer downfield. You know, in Russell Wilson's case, and that's something, you know, Matt talks about all the time, pinpoint versus general area accuracy. Russell Wilson is as pinpoint a downfield thrower as it gets in the NFL. And when you have passers like that, that can really put it where it needs to be, right in the hands, over the shoulder, you know, in the breadbasket, it's less dependent on the receiver's skill. The success of the play is less dependent on the receiver's skill. It helps to have those guys like Lockett and Metcalf that can track the ball well and make the tough catches downfield. But it's, Wilson will still be productive even without guys who really specialize in that area, because his passes are so accurate. Wentz is a general area accuracy guy. He can throw it deep. The ball will get in a general vicinity of where the receiver is. So for passers like that, the effectiveness of their downfield throwing really depends on the quality of the receiver. So you saw when DeSean Jackson was out there week one, Wentz was able to hit him a couple times with some nice deep passes. Jackson could adjust to the ball, you know, manipulate his path so he's catching it on the run with separation. When you don't have a guy like that, now these general area throws go to receivers who aren't good at tracking or adjusting to the ball or manipulating the defensive back to create that last minute separation, and the plays just don't work. You know, you have the internet memes where Nelson Aguilar is running downfield, a pass is a couple yards inside, and he just sort of, you know, limply jogs through the throw rather than trying to adjust and catch it. And that's who Aguilar has been. You know, he's never been excellent at tracking downfield passes. You know, he's more of an underneath type of player, slot type of player. And so Wentz doesn't have a receiver that can capitalize on those general area throws down the field. And so it's led to, you know, really difficult time downfield, and the receivers get a lot of blame for that. But Wentz's tendency to be a general area thrower down the field, you know, also is part of the problem.
So where you have, you know, Russell Wilson, you know, almost being a perfect match. And he can actually overcome some of those things, you know, for his receivers. With Wentz, it's if you don't have a receiver that can do those things, and then you pair it, you know, with a guy like him that just has the general accuracy, then that's creating issues, is what I think I'm hearing you say.
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely sort of it in a nutshell. And just, you know, also just highlighting the difference between pinpoint accuracy and general accuracy and where it makes a difference, because that is something that Matt talks about, and it's such a great point when evaluating passers. Because those pinpoint accurate passers are guys who will have success regardless of the context, where the general accuracy guys, you know, it's going to be more hit or miss game to game, year to year, because a lot of it depends on the surrounding factors that are there.
Gotcha. So let's talk a little bit about, you know, these pass catchers. You know, if you drafted Zach Ertz, you probably drafted him as a top three tight end, you know, off of the board. Maybe you took Kittle ahead of him, but it was pretty normal to see Kelce go, then Ertz go, and then Kittle go. And this last weekend, Ertz, you know, kind of rebounded. You know, he got 28% of the targets. But before that, in the previous several weeks, you know, it just wasn't happening, you know, for Zach Ertz. You know, 21% of the targets, 20% of the targets, 19% of the targets, 17% of the targets. And while those are all, you know, those are nice, Jay, you know, whenever you take a guy like Zach Ertz, you know, you're counting on, you know, 25%, you know, targets pretty much every week. But Dallas Goedert has really become a thing, you know, so here are his targets, 20%, 15, 17, and then 10 over the last 4 weeks. And his routes per dropback are increasing. His snaps are increasing. So this is an offense that really has moved to more, you know, of a 12 personnel look. And it seems to also be impacting Zach Ertz, because now, you know, you've got the targets being split between the two guys working in a similar area. You know, if you look at their average depth of target, you know, they're not real far apart either. Ertz is at a 9.4, Goddard slightly shallow, which I would almost expect the opposite. His is slightly shallower at a 6.6. So did you notice anything with these, you know, two tight ends, or even just, you know, the personnel in general and the way that they're being used, and any thoughts from a fantasy perspective going forward?
Yeah, I mean, when I watch this offense, I think that a lot of it comes down to not having great personnel to fit what they're trying to do, and then also to fit with Carson Wentz's strengths as a passer. You know, Ertz is really a timing and rhythm player. He runs those short intermediate routes, creates separation, and sort of has a window where he's ready for a pass. And if you miss that window, the window's going to close, because he's not going to then explode and create separation for 5, 6, 7 steps as he's developing his route. When I've watched Wentz this year, he's really not getting rid of the ball at the top of his drop. You know, he'll take his drop, he'll pat the ball a few times. The windows are open, then they close. You know, it's a great play, 3rd and 3 this week, 3rd and goal at the 3-yard line. They run a little double slant with Goddard and Ertz, and Ertz is, you know, the second player coming in behind Goddard. And there's a window there right at the top of Wentz's drop where he should just get rid of the ball to Ertz. You know, there's a safety closing. Windows close very quickly in the red zone just because everything's more compressed. But there's a window there, you know, should have been a 3-yard touchdown. Wentz hesitates, you know, misses the window, then goes to his 3rd, 4th option before he's sacked. And so I think a lot of the struggle has been that Ertz isn't getting the ball in those windows where it's open. And, you know, it's just out of sync with Wentz, with the receivers. I think DeSean Jackson was a huge part of their offense going into the season. You know, when you look at week 1, the type of routes he was running, the volume of targets he was receiving, there was a significant portion of this offense that was really designed around having a guy like that, and they just don't have that now. And I think a lot of it is downstream effects from missing that type of guy. And then also, you know, Wentz not really progressing as a timing, rhythm, anticipation thrower.
So do you see, you know, Wentz as being, you know, a buy low type candidate? I mean, is this something that, you know, is something that you see correcting itself, or is this a bigger issue And this probably just is what it is, you know, for the season. And you're better off with a guy like a Matt Stafford or a Russell Wilson.
Well, when I'm talking about, I mean, for the rest of the season, and also, you know, when you're talking about dynasty, I'm a guy who leans toward the talent. And I think, you know, a lot of people want to make Wentz an elite quarterback, but I don't think he's in the same category of talent as a player, both in terms of arm talent and then also, you know, the cognitive side of quarterbacking, processing, you know, anticipating, making tight window throws on time. He's a tier or two below both of those guys in that category. And so for me, you know, long term, I'm rolling with the guy who is the better talent. Wentz has benefited from really an elite offensive line and, you know, a pretty good stable of surrounding talent that hasn't been able to produce quite as well this year. And I think my personal opinion is that he is a bit overrated in terms of, you know, questions about whether he is elite or not. I don't think that he's particularly close to being an elite NFL quarterback for, you know, various reasons that I pointed out, the general accuracy issues, the processing, you know, making throws on time to the intermediate areas of the field. I think in the NFL, if a quarterback can't, you know, go back, read 1, 2, 3 receivers and make a 15-yard throw, you know, between a tight window with anticipation consistently, that eventually those quarterbacks run into struggles because those are really the most difficult routes to take away from a defensive perspective. And so you see the guys who have long-term success, you know, Drew Brees, Tom Brady, and they're really able to do that consistently and reproducibly throughout their whole career. So I think Wentz has to grow as a quarterback. I haven't seen it yet. For the rest of this season, especially when you factor in the surrounding personnel and how it hasn't been a great fit in Philadelphia, I'm definitely rolling with Stafford and especially Wilson over him, you know, rest of the season.
Yeah, what's interesting, you know, with this offense, Jay, is it's typically been one of the more pass-heavy offenses in the league, but it's something where they've really been running the ball more. You know, so we talked about Seattle earlier being at a 58% of their plays were actually pass plays or where they drop back to pass. So that's not attempts, but truly dropping back to pass. They could end up getting sacked. They could end up, you know, scrambling. But if you look at Philly, is at the same number, 58%. And this is normally a team that would be, you know, up around a 65% mark. So Philly almost seems to have adjusted as well. And, you know, I would feel bad if we didn't at least go ahead and hit on one more topic while we're on Philly. I know we were mostly talking about quarterbacks and passing game and the passing games, but I know that, you know, we're a podcast that's been kind of rough on Miles Sanders. And I saw you put some new video out on Sanders and you had some positive things to say about him and some things that he's doing on the field. So, you know, do you want to highlight some of those things?
Yeah, well, I think Doug Peterson has shown to be a smart coach, and he's a guy who uses his players to their strengths. You know, some coaches, if a player struggles, they'll put him in the doghouse. They won't see the field. Sanders lost his opportunity as, you know, the every down between the tackles back. Obviously, over the past several weeks, Jordan Howard has led the backfield in carries by a wide margin, and they've really established a pretty consistent running game. You know, they have a great blocking offensive line in terms of the run game. And Jordan Howard is just such a solid, reliable runner who really, you know, processes well between the tackles, picks up an extra 1, 2, 3 yards as he's going down through contact. And so it's really been a nice, consistent fit there. And he may not offer the explosive upside that they liked with Sanders, but that consistency, and, you know, we talked about this with Sanders going in, that consistency is really important to keeping that offense on schedule and productive and having those consistent drives that get you in scoring position. Now, that doesn't mean Sanders is completely useless as a player. He is explosive. You know, he's very fast. He has good balance, good agility. And so Peterson has schemed him into space. You know, they've used him a lot as a receiver. They've gotten him looks in the running game where, you know, it's more gap style runs. Okay, you run through this gap. The play's either going to be there or it's not. If they get a lane, he has that explosiveness to take it for a big one. And really, you know, one thing that's promising for me in terms of his development, and this is the video I posted this morning, is that in the open field, he's sort of slowed down a little bit. And that's an important process for NFL players coming in from college, where the tendency is to want to speed everything up. And so it's a play where he catches the ball on a screen. Instead of just getting out ahead and getting tackled by the first guy, he slows down, perfect timing with his linemen who are releasing to block downfield on the screen. Really manipulates the leverage of the defender as he's coming up into the right tackle, and runs that defender into the block, and, you know, picks up an extra 10, 15 yards by manipulating the leverage in that manner. And that was really, really great stuff by Sanders, and really promising for his development as a runner, not only in the open field, but also potentially between the tackles, because understanding that leverage is really a key component to being able to understand where to go between the tackles. It's just everything inside happens faster and there's a little less time to read it. So a very, very promising play for Sanders.
Yeah. So I had to make sure we brought that up.
Yeah.
Because I've actually had comments on Twitter that, like, we're the Sanders haters. So
yeah, I posted that video and someone's like, "Oh wow, a positive post on Miles Sanders. It's a good Friday."
It is definitely a good Friday. Well, I think that's going to do it for us, Jay. Is there anything else that you wanted to hit on, you know, before we hop off?
No, I think I'm good. You know, excited to see how the rest of the season is playing out. Had a lot of fun talking to you today.
Yeah, absolutely. Me too. And if you guys aren't following Jay, you need to be following him on Twitter. It's at Jay Moyer FB. You can follow me at Dwayne McFarlane. That's D-W-A-I-N. Of course, we both do other work for the RSP. So you guys make sure that you're following at Matt Waldman and checking out all of his great work and Jay's work there. Jay's been doing some great breakdowns on running backs, you know, each week that I like to read. So some really great stuff there that's going to help get you smarter. But until we see you next time, you guys, good luck, unless you're playing one of us. See ya.